Welcome to Baby Wearing and Breastfeeding, Nurturing Miracles, a podcast dedicated to the unique challenges and joys of parenting medically complex kids. Each week, we'll engage in discussions relevant to all parents navigating their children's illnesses. I'm your host, Megan Paugh, a lactation consultant and mom to a medically complex child, here to share insights and support on this nurturing journey. Welcome back to Baby Wearing and Breastfeeding, Nurturing Miracles, the podcast where we talk about everything baby wearing and breastfeeding, specifically tailored to our medically complex kids. I'm Megan. I'm your host. I'm also a lactation consultant, the owner of Amphibia Baby, a mom to four, who one of my four is a medically complex child. Today, we're going to be specifically talking about advocating for our medically complex children, and we're going to dive into baby wearing. And to help me do that, we have Christy Cook. So Christy has been very vocal about advocating for her son, Robbie. She is very active on social media. You can find her on Instagram at Accessible Adventures. Robbie has severe epilepsy and they travel a lot and they share their experiences, and she will share, you know, the accessible gear that they found. She shares her advocacy work and what you can do if you want to travel with your child. And you need to navigate some of those things for your kids. So Christy, thank you so much for joining me today. Can you share a little bit, just share about yourself, kind of start from the beginning. So for people who have not been introduced to you yet, can you share, like, when did you find your son's diagnosis? When did you find it out? And then just go from there. So how did you, a long story, right? But start from the time that you found his diagnosis, kind of how you guys navigated that, and then what led you to actually being more active and vocal about advocating for him and all of that great stuff.
Yeah, so my name is Christy Cook. Our family shares our adventures as Accessible Adventures. So that's kind of where we are now, but our son is 9. So this all started 9 years ago. As a mom of 3 at the time, who had no idea what the complex world of medical needs looked like, Robbie was born at term. So we went through my whole pregnancy. I was healthy. He was born at term. We went home. We started to kind of notice he wasn't sitting up and doing these things that our other children did. But when we mentioned it, everyone was like, oh, you know, his head's a little bigger. It's probably nothing. At 6 months old, he had a seizure. When he started seizing, they couldn't stop it. So I remember the EMT showed up at our house and he was just pale in the face because he'd given him rescue meds and he was waiting for him to come out and he just wasn't coming out. So we're in the ambulance. And when the people in the ambulance with you look scared, that's scary.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that impact now. I was like, oh, they must always look like this. But I've been in ambulances so many times since then that moment sticks out for me more than any. He seized for an hour. So he was stuck in status for an hour. I mean, our family was at the hospital from their jobs, from their homes. And he was still actively seizing. So they did, I mean, an array of tests and MRIs and all these things. And they said, oh, you know what? It could have just been a one-time thing. It may have been a febrile seizure. So for those who don't know what a febrile seizure is, typically you're sick and you have a spike in fever, like quickly, that can cause your body to convulse, to go into seizures. Looking back now, I don't think that that's what this was. His fever was like 100.5, not 105. So the reality of it, like, being that is probably pretty low, but they put him on like a prophylactic medication, just in case type of seizure medication. And we went another 3 months walking on eggshells, staring at him all the time and nothing happened. So right as we kind of started to let our guard down, he was getting in therapies because he was a little behind, he started seizing again, but this time it looked completely different. They were like clusters of small seizures, but they would just be back to back to back and they would not stop. So again, we call, the same fire chief shows up first. Thank goodness we live very close to the firehouse. So they always beat the EMTs. He walks in, says hello. He remembered us. we're going to bring you to this local hospital. Our local hospital was not a children's hospital. So they bring us to the local hospital. He gets stabilized and they said, we're going to send you home. You'll have a follow-up with this neurologist that you saw a few months ago. So we go home. He seizes again and he won't stop. So we call, the fire chief shows back up and he says, what are you doing here? Why are you here? And we were like, because they sent us home. We had no idea how to advocate at this point. And this is why what we do now is so important to me, because when these journeys start, you are so lost. You don't know the power you hold. You don't know that you can say no or advocate for things. So he says, we're not taking you there. We're going to take you to this other hospital. They have a pediatric like ER. Again, it's not a real children's hospital, but it's the closest one. So he got him stabilized out of the seizure this time, and they go the opposite direction. So we get there and the nurse comes in and we explain everything. And the doctor comes in and he was like, I need you to refuse to go home and to demand to go to this children's hospital that's an hour away. And I was like, huh? And he said, this is the second time in a day. Yeah. And I can't just send you there unless you refuse to go home. So that's when I started to learn the power of being a parent and advocating, because I've got like multiple people in this room telling me like, we can't do this unless you basically make us do this. So I said, okay. So I'm on my way there. Someone randomly messaged me, one of my neighbors, she knew someone that had a kid with epilepsy. And he was like, when you get there, you say, I'm not leaving until I see this doctor. He's an epileptologist, not just a neurologist. And that's like, they specialize in epilepsy, not just every condition that has to do with the brain. So we had so many people reaching out and like helping me make those decisions. And I was just like their voice completely lost. Not, I'm like, I don't think I can say that. Yes, you can. Yes. So fast forward through 2 years of, they cannot control this. He had what is called infantile spasms. And that they are little seizures with big consequences. So essentially you have these little clusters of seizures that stack on top of each other. They can last 30 to 45 minutes. It would stop. He was having hundreds a day. I mean, hundreds, like 30 clusters of hundreds of seizures each. Like it was a really hard point because he wasn't progressing at all. He was kind of stuck still. And we again got advice from other people and they were like, you need to get this other doctor. You can fire a doctor. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. So as we started to create a community, just like reaching out to other parents, I found that that was the most supportive thing, as other parents who had been through it and them helping me learn how to kind of stand on my feet and say yes or no, or we're not doing that right now, or we're doing this, or I can't leave, to get us where we are. So his seizures have never stopped. My son still has seizures just about every day. He's been through every diet, medication, brain surgery. He has a VNS implant, just about every procedure or anything that you can think of on the market that's available for epilepsy, Robbie has tried. And I think in the beginning, I thought, if I could just stop it, if I could just get control, right? That loss of control is so big in that journey. And I thought, if I could just stop it, then he could get better. And I think it took me until, if he's nine now, probably six, for me to say, this is going to be his life. And we have to make the best of it, because he's not living. He's like, we're just surviving. And that's kind of how we shifted into this phase of our life.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things that you said that I want to like narrow down into for people that are listening. And the first, and I have been there myself, is somebody suggested, it sounded like Robbie was around 9 months old when he had those other seizures where it was like back to back and you went to a different hospital and they were like, hey, and that's when you first learned to advocate for yourself. And then shortly after that, and during that process, there people were recommending to you, you know, see a different specialty doctor, you know, at any point when you were doing that, did you run into the barrier of how are we going to pay for this? Because I know that that is a big barrier for a lot of families, that insurance doesn't, like, people don't fall into network, even though these are life-saving measures and they should, but sometimes it doesn't happen. And, you know, your insurance doesn't cover a specialty doctor, or you have to travel far for them or out of network. So what were some of the barriers that you came up against, and how did you guys navigate that?
Yeah, so we had to travel minimally an hour for every specialist. We got lucky because most of the main specialists were associated with the Children's Hospital and they did take our insurance. We had some of those issues with like pediatricians once, and that was once we transitioned because we had private insurance. And something that I feel like doesn't come up a lot, people think private insurance is better than Medicaid. And that's not always the case. So our private insurance would not cover a wheelchair. He was 2 years old. He couldn't sit up on his own. He could not sit in a stroller because he didn't have lateral supports. If you're listening, you don't know what a lateral support is. It's supports that go on your sides, basically like around your hips, so that they don't tip over and they're not like curving their spine and having future problems. So I had to baby wear him everywhere. That's where my baby wearing journey started. My son could not sit in a stroller and I was fighting and fighting and could not get a wheelchair approved. He ended up needing brain surgery. And when we talked about it, my husband looked at me and he said, I think it's time that someone stays home. And I think it's gotta be you. I don't think I can do it. Like, because we were working opposite schedules and Robbie was seizing all day and he kept calling me and he was like, I don't know. Do we go to the ER? Do we not go to the ER? So I had to keep leaving work. And it wasn't working out anymore. So that transitioned us from having private insurance to making not very much for a family of five. And we qualified for a like version of like buy-in Medicaid. Once you get that, they approve equipment, but not everyone takes them. So it's like you have these pros and these cons. So we lost our regular pediatrician. We couldn't find anyone else that like even knew what infantile spasms were. Like we were in an office and I said, hold on, he's seizing. And a pediatrician said, no, he's not. Yeah, he is. And they were like, no, he's not. That's not a seizure. And I was like, well, an epileptologist, an EEG, like they would all confirm that, yes, it is. And we can't come here anymore. So we definitely had a lot of barriers. That is actually one of the reasons, the main reason we moved from Florida to Colorado was to access Medicaid that didn't limit your income. Because in most states, you have to be in poverty. And being in poverty, as hard as it is, being in poverty with a medically complex child that has all of these additional needs that are and things that aren't being covered by insurance and it's so expensive is nearly impossible. Yeah. So we got by for as long as we could. And then we packed up everything. We left our dream home. I mean, our absolute beautiful dream home that you picked over a Florida home with a white picket fence and a huge pool. Like that's what we had. And we came here and I mean, our house, I'm very thankful for, but the market here is different than it was there. So we don't have what we had there here. But what we do have is access to an amazing team. Our son has Medicaid and our income is not qualified towards that. So we're able to actually work and provide for our family and get to that next stage of life that we couldn't do there.
Yeah, that's really, man, that first of all, that's amazing that you have advocated so hard for your son to the point of moving states and that's a pretty sizable distance. So I like to talk a little bit about the Medicaid again, because that is something that is a really big barrier for people, because if you don't qualify, then you're in this like crazy spot of what do you do? Because we have had that where, and I don't know if this has happened to you, but one thing that has happened to us is we went on vacation and like, you feel like a horrible mother. I forgot my son's medicine and it's very bad. Yeah. And we are four states away. So it's not like I can just drive home and get it. And, you know, the particular insurance that we have that we fall under, I don't want to say it, but all the pharmacies around us, like they didn't cover. And so to go and get it out of pocket for like two pills was $700. Wow. And what do? What do you do? You have to. So it's just, you have to, there's not a choice, but, and that's one of the things, but in Medicaid, had we been able to qualify for it, would have covered that. The other thing that, that happens is, and we got lucky because when our son had his first two surgeries, it was during COVID. We were both out of work. So we qualified for Medicaid at a time where he had to have his surgeries and they covered it. Otherwise, we would have been paying tens of thousands of dollars, like still. So these are huge barriers for a lot of families.
That is what we did for the first few years. And it's not something that we talk about often just because it's just a regular part of our life. But my husband is a type 1 diabetic. So he is on an insulin pump. He takes, you know, insulin every day. He has like the reservoirs and all these things. And that is incredibly expensive too. He obviously is not in Medicaid. He's on private insurance. So initially we had all of his medical expenses that we were used to covering and then all of Robbie's, and everyone has all of these deductibles. And then at that time, I was a wreck. I mean, we had just found out about our kid's diagnosis. I was going to therapy multiple times a week. There are co-pays for that. So
yeah. Oh yeah. And sometimes insurance doesn't even cover it.
Right. Yeah. It was hard. We had good insurance, private insurance, but other than they wouldn't cover like actual durable medical equipment, like the wheelchair. How can you tell me that he doesn't need that? So there are definitely some restraints there. And I talk to parents, they message me now through our platform and they go, you know, we can't access Medicaid like you can in Colorado. And my son has the same level of disability as you, but my husband has to work enough hours to be able to afford our bills. So we're just over, that's why we were going to move, because we were about to hit just over, right, that income limit in Florida for buy-in. And we were like, well, if we go over and we have all these extra expenses and medical expenses, I don't know how we're going to stay afloat. And then they'll ask me like, you know, what do you do when you have to pick between like therapy or equipment or therapy and the quality of food that you feed your kids? That's so hard. We've been lucky enough that when he needed therapy, we were able to figure it out, but not everyone is in that same boat. That's one thing that I advocate for largely. I think that Medicaid should be accessed by level of disability and not by your parents' income.
Yeah.
It's just so hard, especially with the income limits being what they are. You can't live on that with a family.
No. Yep. Not at all. So you mentioned something, parents reach out and they ask you, what do you do when it comes down to making these decisions between therapy or equipment or other treatments? What is your advice for that? How do you approach it? And just personally, how would you approach it if you were in that situation where you didn't have the coverage?
So I generally shoot them in the direction for equipment needs, into like special needs parents groups. So you will find there are groups, especially on Facebook, locally for almost every town that we've been in. And it'll be like the city's name, special needs parents of, you know, city name. And so I reach out there and say, you know, post in here and see if you can find equipment that will fit your kid, because that's what we had to do for a while. Sometimes you have to pay for it, but I paid, I don't know, $250, $300 for a wheelchair. Actually, someone else paid for it and it was a gift to us for like Robin Christmas or something. I can't remember. But it was bought out of pocket and it was this old, big, heavy, bulky thing, but we had a stroller, right? So I send them that direction for things like that. And then I have a list of resources and grants that will hopefully continue to grow. Depending on where you live, what you need, there are grants that can step in and help pay for some of that. Like we had a seizure monitor covered. There's another grant that's what we use to get our son's go-to seat, which has lateral supports. So you could strap it to anything. So we could sit in a regular chair. And then as far as therapy, there are a lot of therapists like on social media that are showing you moves, right? You can follow like people from the Napa Center. Go on YouTube, look at videos. Is it ideally what you want to do? No, but can they give you some ideas of what you can do in the meantime until you can figure something else out? Yeah. I've also helped, I think, 9 families at this point move from their state and relocate to where I live. So I mean, through the whole process, like this is the realtor that we use. This is the doctor that we use. This is the company that we use to get on the waiver. This is the company that we work for, and kind of hold their hand through the process, because I had two different moms that did that for me, and I was so lost and I had no idea what I was doing, and they just kept, you can do it, you can do it. And we did it, and it changed our life. So I try to be that person for anyone that is actually interested in making that change.
I love that. So for everybody listening, advocating can take on actually different forms. It doesn't mean that you have to be on a big platform advocating for a community. It just means that, you know, you could be asking for help, you know, asking for resources. Advocating could mean that you are, you know, standing up on the behalf of your child at a doctor's office and saying, this is not working for us. Maybe finding a different doctor. Advocating could mean really kind of pushing back on your insurance to try to find the things that you need or try to get coverage for the things that you need. And then if that's not possible, then what you just said, Christy, is fantastic. So reaching out, finding what grants are out there and available. You guys, Christy is just this amazing resource, and she's more than willing. Where can people find a lot of the lists that you've just mentioned? So do you have it on your website? Where can they find that?
So currently it lives on my Instagram in a highlight bubble.
Perfect.
So, yeah, there's highlight bubbles for like different states that we've visited. They need to be updated a little bit more, but there are states and there are accessible locations you can visit. And then there's a highlight bubble for like gear that we like and that we recommend. There's a highlight bubble for grants and resources, and they're all linked in there. So it'll have like maybe a screenshot of their website and say, this is what this is for. I did not know that when we were in Florida, there's a grant for kids in Florida that have epilepsy, and it would have covered the out-of-pocket expenses for therapy.
That
would have been nice to know. It's just one of those things that there are just not enough resources in one spot. Everything that I have on my page, I have added into the Connected Parent site. I partner with them. I full-heartedly believe in what they're doing. It's called the ConnectedParent.net. Basically, this other medically complex mom said, we're constantly reaching in all these different directions, and there's not one directory of like, what do we need? Can you review therapists, locations, places where you can find beach wheelchairs, grants, resources? She put it all in one place.
So, I love that. Yeah. So that people are not just chasing down a rabbit hole, because that can, it can feel like that so much. Yeah. That's so fantastic.
The best advice is always from someone that's been where you are. Right? The best gear recommendations. It's someone that has a kid that's like your kid, and they've tried five things and wasted all their money, and they found something that worked. And that's what we try to share through our platform. And she's just doing it on this larger search engine scale. And it's wonderful. I appreciate it so much. So I find things on there and I'm like, this is what I do. And then I'll look and I'm like, that's in my area. Oh my gosh, how did you find that?
Awesome. That's really, really great to hear. And for everybody listening, what I'll do too is I will, of course, put your Instagram handle in the podcast notes, but then I'll also add a lot of these resources so that people can find it in more than one place. Can you actually, you mentioned that, and I know that baby wearing has been really helpful for you guys, especially in the early years. Is there a particular carrier or type of carrier that you found was most helpful for your lifestyle? Because I know people's lifestyles will, you know, play a part in what they choose, but what worked for you?
Yeah. So we've tried a handful of different things. We use Kinder Pecs pretty like religiously. That is our go-to brand. When we started, they only went to, maybe toddler, maybe preschool. As Robbie's grown, we've just been lucky enough that every time he's about to size out, she's like, here's a new size. And I'm like, how did
Love
you
it.
Know? I knew her, right? No one was advocating. She was just like, oh, you know, well, I don't know why. I guess that's a good question for her, but I just kept getting lucky. And she has all the way up to child size. It holds up to 85 pounds. My son has a very long torso and little legs. So he is in the weight limit, but he is starting to outgrow the torso size on it. Mm-hmm. She is currently creating an even bigger size.
And oh, that's so great.
That one might actually be thanks to Robbie. It definitely is. We're working with her on it. We've sent her measurements. I love them so much. We started with them when Robbie was like less than one, and that's how we had to go everywhere. I mean, appointments, dropping off our other kids at school. Like if we were going anywhere at that point, he had brain surgery and he had an incision all the way across the top of his head. He couldn't sit up and he couldn't be in it. We didn't have a wheelchair. So yeah. We carried him everywhere. He didn't have head support. So I used to carry him on my front and he would lay his head on my chest. At that point, my husband couldn't carry him because he just, you know, doesn't have a chest to support his head. Eventually he swung around to my back. I carried him everywhere until he was five, almost six. And he started to get a little bit too big for me, especially for long distances. Now him and his dad go everywhere. His dad's legs are his legs. We go hiking. I still throw him on my back, for short distances, just because it's this, I didn't realize what I was losing. Right. And that bond, Robbie is still cognitively infant minded. And it's that same bond that you have with your baby when you're holding them close and they feel your warmth and they hear your heartbeat. Robbie loves being worn. So I make it a point now. I can't go far. I can't do more than 30 minutes. He weighs about 70 pounds and he's like leaning all different ways.
Yeah.
But I still put him on my back and I bond with him doing that. And he gets so happy and he always gives me big hugs and kisses when we're done. So I don't see an end near in sight, but we're definitely not wearing for as long anymore as he's getting bigger.
Did you ever wear him when you were in the hospital as an inpatient?
You did.
So to calm him when he was in the hospital for EEGs, Robbie's had more EEGs than I could count. And if you don't know what an EEG is, it's where they look at the brain waves, right, to search for seizures, see where they're coming from, if there's anything that can be done as far as surgery. So he's had all types of testing done, but it does get, he has sensory issues. So he would get restless. So I would carry him, strap him on my front, because as he got bigger, it's hard to maneuver this big child without a carrier. So I would strap him on my front and snuggle him, be able to kind of walk around and rock back and forth and soothe him without hurting my arms while he has all these wires coming off. Because trying to manage all of the wires and a kid that is not helping you, he doesn't wrap his legs around you and hold on, right? Like a typical 3 or 4 year old would at the time. So we've definitely used it in the hospital. I would show up to the hospital with all types of gear, a big playpen, that like a chair that is like a swinging chair. The nurses would walk in and be like, what is going on in here? This is great.
Where's all this good stuff coming from? His mom is prepared.
Home. But there were times where we were there for 3 weeks, you know, we lived there. So we tried to make it as comfortable as we could for him and for us. And you only get one body as a caregiver. I tell this to people all the time. So if there's anything that you can do to help yourself, that is something where with my arms, as he got older and bigger and I wanted to hold him and console him the way that you would an infant, I just wasn't strong enough. But if I strapped him to me and it dispersed a lot of that weight, I could do it.
Yeah. You know, I want to point out too, and this is really, was really helpful for us, that there is absolutely research also that shows that keeping your child on you, especially skin to skin, but even so, wearing them can help them manage their pain and absolutely keeps their cortisol or their stress hormone low. So, you know, we have utilized it every time that we have been in the hospital, especially because a lot of all the stuff that my son has to have done is not comfortable. So, and when your child is in pain, they want to be held, especially if they're in pain and we're there, like you said, for a week at a time, you're exhausted. Like your arms are just jello. Like there's no way you can hold that child for that long. My husband and I would take shifts because my husband's a really strong guy. So I would do like a most of the day shift and then he would do most of the night shift because especially my son's a little bit younger than Robbie is. Like when they're that young, like he wasn't going to be late, put down in the bed to sleep. Like that wasn't happening. It was literally 24 hours of being worn.
We would do the same thing. And at that point, my husband was working full time. And we lived the opposite direction of the hospital and we had animals. So he would have to get off work, go home, tend to them 30 minutes this way, and then come back an hour this way. And come to the hospital and he would give me a break for 4 or 5 hours. I would sleep, shower, eat, do whatever I needed to do. He would hold him. And then I would take a shift because he was so tired, and then he would sleep, and then he would wake up again and he would take a shift and just kind of keep going back and forth. That I don't know what was more tiring in that time.
Everybody's tired. Like
exhausting, going back and forth and trying to, you know, hold down a job, because if one of us isn't working, how are we?
Yeah.
Also exhausting. I think
that it is a lot to manage, which is why having the tools at your disposal, so not just the baby carrier, but the other things that you brought to the hospital, like to do whatever you can to manage it. Oh my God, that is just so important. So that's, again, to me, that's like a part of advocating for yourself is, you know, knowing what is going to help you get through this process and using it. So the gear, right? Did you, now that Robbie is getting older, or really even when he was 4 or 5, did you ever have people that gave you a hard time or gave you, you know, the look or said something to you like, why are you wearing this 5-year-old who is so big, you know, they should be walking, you know, like, how did you navigate that?
Now that he is this big, I think that people automatically, he looks typical, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a disability that you look at him physically and
you can see it.
I can see that, right? Until you see him start moving and vocalizing, because he's nonverbal. So the way that he makes noise, because he's nonverbal, but he's loud. So when he starts making noises, people are like, oh, wait a minute. And now that he's bigger, I think people automatically assume, like, she's not just carrying the 60, 70 pound kid for fun. So now we get more like, yeah, you know, people cheer us on. Yeah. We were on a trail and my husband carries him more than me now. And I always hear, because I'm slow. I've got short little legs. I'm usually like 10, 15 foot behind, even when he's carrying Robbie. And then he keeps stopping and waiting for me. And like, that's so hot. So he's, you know, that's what he gets. But I'm like, that's so funny. Because when I was carrying him.
Nobody's shouting at you. That's so
hot. Between like 3 and 5, right? So people just assumed that he was being lazy, right? He just, so I constantly got, oh, that's a heavy load. Well, you should just have him walk. He should just be walking. And for the longest time, I, you know, well, he can't walk. He has a disability, or, you know, he uses a wheelchair, but it's just, it's hard to take out the wheelchair, put him in and do all these things as it is to just throw him on my back at that point. But I got it constantly. And eventually I was like, you're right.
You just was like, I'm not even going to argue with you because it's not worth it. Yeah, you're right. Like, oh my goodness, people.
I wore him everywhere. When I mean, I mean everywhere. If I went grocery shopping, he couldn't sit in a cart.
Right.
And my husband works 60 hours a week. So
you got to go grocery shopping. Right.
We need food. I mean, when we went anywhere. And I remember, I mean, my daughter must have been in maybe kindergarten and someone said something. I said, you're right. I really should put him down. And she goes, Mommy, he can't walk. And the person looked mortified. Like,
good for your daughter. Good.
I was, oh, I shouldn't have said that. And that's when I realized, like, I really should take the time, because people generally, they do mean well. Yeah. I don't think that people stare to make you feel bad, right? Even when he's in a wheelchair. So I've always been very pro, like, do you have any questions? You know, let me talk through this with you. And I think it also is a little easier for me to advocate in that way. And even on our platform, because not only is Robbie like nonverbal at this time, but he also has some pretty severe cognitive delays. So for the most part, he doesn't understand language at this point. I'm not saying that he never will, but as of right now, he doesn't. So I can have that conversation and be like, you can talk to him, and I advocate for them to say hi. And, but I can also have that sidebar conversation saying, hey, this is what's going on, and answer questions for small children. So that they're not afraid of people that look differently. And I don't have to worry about the way that Robbie feels in that moment. Right. Yeah. And that's so hard. Like, I've had parents ask, cause they're like, if my kid's sitting here, they don't want to divulge all that information. So I can definitely see kind of both sides of that. And I think that for me has made it easier to kind of advocate for him and make sure, I always tell everyone, always assume competence. And we checked out, we recently went on a trip to Florida for the first time in 3 years. And we were at a Publix and the guy passed him or tried to pass him a crayon and a piece of paper. They like give these out to kids, I guess. I haven't been to Publix in years. And he was, and my husband kind of was like, oh, thank you. And grabbed it and goes, oh, is he feeling okay? I said, yeah, he's feeling great. He's disabled. And he goes, okay. Well, I don't know. Should I have given him that? And I was like, yeah, I think that's great. You know, always assume competence. So it's wonderful. He'll bring it home and either his sister or one of his cousins will color the picture for him. We can put it on his wall. I think that that's fantastic. Yeah. And then we're walking out and he says, I hope you feel better soon.
Okay. Well, he was trying.
Yeah, so, and I was like, yeah. I mean,
his heart was in the right place.
It was. And I think that as parents of medically complex kids, we really have to remember that. And I really try to advocate for that as well. Because I feel like we get a bad rap for getting upset at people. Because so many parents will kind of snap back. And it's because you're so tired.
You're so tired and stressed and emotionally overwhelmed and all the things. But your approach to it is spot on. Number one, I love what you said. I love what you said about always assume competence because you don't know. And it's better to like include the child because if they are competent to whatever degree, like having somebody look at them in the eye, in the face and talk to them, that's really impactful for people. You know, and if they're not able to respond, a lot of the times it's just nice to have somebody try to communicate with you. And then the fact that you're able to sit there and then positively educate them, like I think the more of that that happens, then especially that carries on because then they're going to share it. They're going to teach their kids to be involved. So I love your approach to it. It's really spot on.
Yeah. And Robbie knows, he knows when someone is including him and when someone is talking to him versus when they're not acknowledging he's there.
Yeah.
So I can see the shift in how he's interacting with the room when that's happening. So although he may or may not understand what you're saying, we speak to Robbie in full sentences. I tell him what I'm going to do. I have noticed that when I would originally just tell him, this is what I'm going to do next, and this is why we're going to do it. He didn't understand it as much as now I show him. So I'll say, Robbie, I'm going to change your diaper. And I hold up the diaper. And then I say, mm-hmm. I'm going to feed you. And I hold up his formula. Then he's putting those connections together. So he does have cognitive awareness.
Yes.
It's just the language piece of it. But he understands if you came up to him and engaged with him, whether mm-hmm. or not he understood the words coming out of your mouth. And I think that that's why always assuming competence is so important because he does have feelings. And they do get hurt, right? Mm-hmm. Whether or not he can express that to you.
Yep. But you know, Christy, like to people that are listening to you, because I think that a lot of that what we are discussing is very applicable to people that have healthy children that are dealing with bouts of illness. But also there's two things that I want to say about that. The first is that, and a lot of medical providers are really good about this, but if you work in the pediatric space, but now we are taught when we go in to do things with kids, you don't just dive in, you know, you talk to them. You introduce yourself, you tell them what's going on. I do it with babies. I do oral exams on all my babies, you know, and before I don't just stick my hands in their mouth. I look at them. I talk to them. I say their name. I tell them, okay, may I do this? They're not going to respond. But like, I kind of give them a minute and then go in and do my thing. But that is, it's so important to respect somebody. So, you know, no matter the age, give people respect. And a lot of that, what we are saying is applicable to children that are going through any kind of bouts of illness. If you've got to go and take your child to the hospital and advocate for more tests. You know, if you've got any concerns, it's okay to make sure that you're being heard. And then also I kind of want to touch on the piece that anytime a member of the family is sick, how it impacts the whole family and not just that individual and not just the parents, because you have other kids. So is Robbie, I think, is your oldest. Is that right?
Oh, no,
he's not. tell me, can you share how this has impact, this whole experience has impacted your family as a whole, especially the siblings, because siblings go through a lot. And I think it's, since we're talking about like being really, you know, emotionally mature and aware, I think it's really important that we recognize our kids' siblings.
Absolutely. This is something that we hold near and dear, and that we try so hard to make sure that we are hitting. So Robbie is 3 of 4. I mean, too many kids. I'm over here like looking at.
No, I do that too. And don't even ask a mom who has 4+ kids when everybody's birthdays are. You're gonna have to give us a second.
I always have like the millennial pause on the last one. She's only a year old. I mean, what do you want from me? So our oldest is 23. He's actually my stepson. My husband had him very young, but he's been in the house with us primarily since he was like 8. So he's grown up with these kids.
Nice.
Our next is 10, almost 11. And then Robbie is 9. And then our youngest is 1. And that's a whole different story of how long it took us.
Yeah, that's a huge, yeah. And I do kind of want to delve into that because I think, man, like being able to like get through so much of this, like this really can take up your whole life and your whole space. Yeah. So, but going back, like how have your other children coped with us?
So I will say, our oldest was old enough to fully understand what was going on. So we had real conversations, explained everything that was going on, kind of what the process was, and he just grew up with it. Our youngest, or at the time, right? So our daughter that is 11 now, they're only a year and a half apart. So she's 2 years old and we're staying in hospital for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
My mom and her dad, and she's going back and forth. And that was, it was difficult for her. Mm-hmm. In that time, and she was always one of those I'm fine kids, right? So when she got older, we really started, you know, if there's something that you need, you have to learn how to advocate for yourself, and if you tell me, then I will help you, because we homeschool now because of Robbie's medical complexities. I can't have 5-10 sicknesses a year coming into my house, and that's what we're all experiencing right now. And we don't, because we homeschool. So for her, we were like, this is kind of what we need to do because of Robbie's medical stuff, and what do you want out of this, how do you want it to look. We actually do family therapy, so it's something that I recommend to all families that have sibling children. We take turns going in with her, and we talk about all of the things, and just providing a safe space, and also telling your child, because she was like, you know, I don't need anything. Those are wants, not needs. Robbie's stuff is a need, right? Because of all the stuff he has going on. Like, he has to have medication. He has to stay healthy. But needs are different to different people, right? If you need community, if you need this more time, then you want more one-on-one time, whatever it may be, those are so valid. Right. And your experience through this, I mean, think of as parents, Robbie was almost 6 by the time I really got my stuff together. And I still go through it mentally. But I'm very open about it now versus trying to kind of shove it all in. So by myself going through therapy for years, as she got older and started getting more mature and having a higher understanding of like what it really meant, what Robbie's diagnosis really means, the fears of like SUDEP, right? That's sudden unexpected death and epilepsy, and like his risk for that, we were like, we need to put so much more energy into getting you the coping skills to be able to process all of this, because if it's hard for you, then it's hard for your kids, even if they're hiding it. And so many children, right, they call them blast children, right, because it looks like it's the smooth, perfect surface, but it breaks so easy. And getting her all of those resources, she's become an amazing advocate. And she's 10. Almost.
I love that.
Yeah. So I feel like giving her her power and letting her stand in it and saying, this is my reality. And two things can be true at the same time. It's like the biggest thing that I had to learn in therapy. So like, you can love your brother so much, and you can also wish that your brother could play with you the way that you want him to.
Yep.
That's okay.
100%.
And it's okay to say that out loud and not feel guilty about it. you love him with everything you have, but it's okay to be like, I wish that he was, you know, running around like my cousins are.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that experience and I didn't get it, right? That's perfectly okay to say out loud. So we kind of practiced doing that, and I even practiced doing that in front of her with my own feelings, right? And not to dump too much on children, but to say, you know, if I'm having a hard day, like, I'm very thankful for what we have right now. I feel blessed, and I feel so grateful. But that can be true while also being true, I'm really tired.
Well, we all know that children learn from modeling. More than what you tell them to do, more than what you say, they learn for what you actually do. So if you are practicing in front of her your coping skills, and she sees how you are handling it, she sees the advocacy that you do, that gives her skills. That allows her space to come in and understand that all of her feelings are valid. And it gives her the tools to how to process them. And I'm so glad that you were talking about her standing in the space and having a healing through advocacy, because that's something that we talked about a little bit before we started, that advocacy is important on two fronts. Number one, you're helping to pave the way to get children that are medically complex all of the resources and things that they need along with their families. And that is so vital, because it's just, you know, 97% to 98% of, you know, pregnancies. So we'll talk about pregnancies for a second. They're normal, and they're normal. You know, you go through all the pregnancy symptoms. It's the 2 to 3% that have maternal and fetal complications. And so out of that, you know, I'm not really sure once you have your baby, like then what the statistics become, but 2 to 3% of the entire US, it's a good number. So we definitely need to have advocacy. So that's important on the one hand. On the other hand, what's truly important is that being able to advocate for yourself, whether it's just your voice and you're speaking out for your family, for your child at the doctor's appointments, or you're telling your daughter to advocate for her needs, how healing that is. That's healing for the person. So I'm really glad that you touched on that. And then you brought it in the way of like, our kids need this as well. Like the siblings need it. So yeah, that's absolutely Beautiful.
I think that I started to heal through sharing my story. This is long before mm-hmm. Accessible Adventures. I'm not even going to name it, but I had a platform and it was just supposed to be for like immediate family. And it was because I was getting came at from so many different angles, mm-hmm. right? What's going on? What are the updates? And I can't update 35 people. I'm exhausted. I can barely make my brain work at all. In this moment, I'm in a hospital. We need genetic histories. So we started a page and we invited everyone, but it was like a public page. So mm-hmm. like there, our parents, our parents' friends, and like our friends' friends.
So anybody could access it that were curious so about your story.
Grow. And at first we were like, this is great because, you know, we can share our journey, because I think that there's mm-hmm. just not enough like awareness. I think visibility is everything. So I have never turned on my TV and seen a child that looked like my son, just kind of crawling around and gibbering and kind of doing his own thing. I've never seen that in my life. And I was like, if we could be this platform to show, right? And now that we're in these like online communities, to see all these other families going through it. And I'm like, I am actually not alone.
Yes.
Because no one knows that we're all not alone.
That's so huge. Oh my God. Can I just tell you, that is the biggest piece to mental health for the parent, is recognizing that you are not alone. Because when you do fall into that really small percentage of brackets, like I look around and I was talking to my friends and nobody had our issues, and I didn't even know where to go to, like, you know, who do I talk to? Like, whose kid has had, you know, a transplant? Like, who do I talk to? You know, like, I didn't have any of that, but they're out there. They are out there. You're not alone. That is huge.
It feels so alone. So we started sharing. And as I look back now, I will say that when I have new families reach out to me and they say, I want to start advocating, I want to share our story, because I do believe what you're saying is right. And visibility is important. And this story is so powerful. And I think it's a wonderful thing. I also caution you to remember that this is not your story. this is your child's story.
Good.
To always share your child's story in a way that they can be proud of. Now, that's not to say that I always post like toxic positivity, because that's not where we are, right? We post the good stuff. And we post the stuff that's hard. I will never, and you have never seen my son in just a diaper on the internet,
right.
Or like struggling. That's not to say that Robbie doesn't struggle being nonverbal and not being able to communicate with what he wants. Sometimes he doesn't cry or fuss, or I will never put that on the internet, because those are his vulnerable moments. At my most vulnerable, if someone else was filming and I was unaware and someone shared that, I would most likely not be happy.
Yeah.
I think we could all say that. So I may share my most vulnerable moments with you, because I can make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So people have seen me in tears. They've heard my voice cracking. They've seen that emotion in me. They've seen all of the joy in Robbie. And that is the way that I choose to share his journey, because what if in 10, 20, 30 years from now, they come up with something and it heals that part of his brain and he has this cognitive awareness, he can look back and be like, man, mom, I'm so proud of you. Not, oh my gosh, why did you share that?
Yeah.
Why did you share me having this emotional meltdown and I was so upset and you took out a phone? I will never. So that's something that I just caution parents, is to just remember that things live on the internet forever. I wish I knew this in the beginning, because not that I ever shared him in that light, but just like, the intimate details of his medical history, the entire world doesn't need to know. I mean, we had like at max 1,000 followers. That's still 1,000 people that really didn't need that personal detail of all of his medication or what was going on in his therapy. So that's just something that when you're advocating, do so on a level where you can reach other people and it's relatable and you can create that visibility that the world needs. I still get very mean comments about my son. I don't think that's something that is just going to go away. So those are there. That's something that I can't prevent from happening. But I'm not going to share something that for him could have been extremely emotional, or if he was in turmoil, things like that.
Yeah. That's amazing and great guidance. So again, to recap that for everybody listening, remember that your child is under 18. And so what you share does not need to be their private moment, because, you know, they are unable to really have a voice and speak for themselves. You're doing it for them. So like, you know, we are all obviously love our kids, and we don't think that we would do anything that would be showing them in a negative light. But maybe look at things that you might be posting and just think about the future them. The other thing that I think is really important to kind of point out that you just mentioned is that it baffles me actually that people would still send you negative comments on your page. So if you are a parent out there, though, and we all know there are trolls on the internet. So if you do want to share your story, which I do, again, we've said that can be healing. But if you do want to share it in a public way, be at a place where you're ready to receive all kinds of comments. And you've got to do some deep soul searching for that, because you're not going to be ready in those early moments or years of diagnosis, because there's a lot of processing that needs to happen. And it's ongoing. It really, really is. And so just do a really good deep evaluation of yourself, because there's all kinds of people out there. So, you know, and you can always share with the people that love and support you. That's a really good tip. What are your hopes and your goals going forward, not just for y'all's advocacy work, but also as a family?
So one of our big goals is to let Robbie try just about everything that there is. And this whole thing started because we were like, you know, we know the statistics, we know where he stands. And I feel like I just robbed him of the first 6 years. We were just so focused. Like, if I can just get through this therapy, if I can just get him to walk, and I got to a point in my healing journey that I was like, he doesn't want to do this anymore. And even if he doesn't walk, like, that, who am I to say that that means his life is less? So we now have just been on a journey of let's try everything and see what Robbie likes. And Robbie is nonverbal, but he will very clearly let you know if he likes something or if he doesn't like something. He is quite the little adventure seeker. So as we started to go places and do things, I like to capture. So
I love it.
Before we started sharing, I have all these pictures and videos of just like, I just don't want to forget this. I just want to have this in my little memory bank and have it forever. So we started that. And then I realized like the world needs to see Robbie as much as Robbie needs to see the world. And that's how we started our page. And we've actually moved to our next chapter now where I want more than just Robbie to be impacted by this. I want so badly for other families. And like, I've moved so many families from wherever they are to Colorado to get on these Medicaid waivers and be able to experience life and have a two-income family again. And I see this huge impact it's had on them. So now I'm like, what if we could get a bunch of adaptive equipment and we could teach people how to recreate safely and how to adapt recreation and still get your family outside? A moment from this year, we have never for years been able to go like kayaking or paddle boarding. It's super hard because Robbie's like trying to jump out of the boat. So he just loves water. He wants to touch it. So we went with an adaptive sports company and they had these outriggers. I called them anti-tippers and they giggled at me, but that's what they are. They're these like flotation devices in the back. So he could lean and he could touch the water and he was happy and he could still sit up. And then
that is so cool.
Huge paddleboard that you can strap a wheelchair to. And it's so big, your whole family can go on it. And our entire family got on this paddleboard. It's here at Ridgeway State Park in Colorado. It's free to use. They have a floating beach wheelchair and this big adaptive kayak. And for once, our whole family's there and just easily, my husband's in the back just a rowing. I mean, I had a row, but I wasn't rowing. I'm holding the baby and everyone's laughing and giggling.
Oh, I love it.
Like, this is so amazing. Like,
that's so great.
We can do this and our whole family can make memories together, even if one is an infant and one's sitting in a wheelchair and our 10-year-old's dancing on the front.
And you need that. You need those family memories where you are out of the thick of it. You're out of the stress and you're just making memories that are just fun.
So we came home and we thought, man, that was like life-changing. That moment that we can do this together. And it's happened so many times when we find the right gear where it's like, we don't have to, like we went out and we got a track chair rental and our son was in the track chair and not on my husband's back. And I will say he likes my husband's back a little bit better, but he was able on that hike to like really be hands-on with our other kids. And
that's
usually
cool.
He's got
seven yeah.
on his back. So like stopping and playing is, it's just a little difficult depending on how far we're going. So we are hoping to gather as much equipment as we can and do free community events and teach people how to adapt recreation. And if you can't afford it, that's fine. They're going to be free and kind of collide these worlds. So Robbie's not the only one getting to experience this, because just like moving here, I didn't do it on my own. Someone held my hand and someone taught me and said, this is the company I use and this is what I did. And I did things a little differently. I adapted in my own way, but I was able to do it because of their encouragement and because they were guiding me. And I feel like families need guidance. And we do have a lot of adaptive sports companies in the mountains. Mostly it's like skiing and snowboarding. I'm from Florida. I'm not skiing or snowboarding. My husband does. I am clumsy as all get out. I'm not breaking a hip. I'm a caregiver. So I'm like, while that looks super fun and it's on Robbie's bucket list, and I'm sure that he'll go with his dad, like we need ways that kids can recreate, the families can recreate mm-hmm. together and get outdoors that maybe aren't as extreme as that.
Yeah.
That are down in the front range, because if you're from Colorado, then you know what I mean when I say all of these really amazing companies are like 3 hours into the mountains. Right from where we all live, and then all these families are down here, right where the hospitals are. Mm-hmm. That's where we live. So I'm hoping to kind of fill that gap and get more kids out there and show more kids the world and have more families learn how to do this and just feel that joy. It's like
I love it.
Switch flips.
That's just amazing. So for people who are listening and they're loving everything that you're saying, they want to be involved, they want to help. What can they do? What can they do to support you guys, to help other families get the access to the resources and have memories like that? What can they do to help you?
So as of right now, we're sharing on our social media platforms, and then our website is www.accessibleadventures.net. So we will be sharing updates as we go through this process. We are currently looking for board members for a nonprofit so that we can start and be able to get donors and have events and keep things free. Because our business, what we currently do, because I guess we haven't got too much into that, we work with all types of tourism boards and adaptive gear companies and bring that to everyone online. So we are educating online of how did we adapt this adventure? How can you adapt it? What gear can you buy and how can you get outside? And I love doing that online. The messages that keep me going are the ones that say, hey, I saw you share this life vest and it's changed our life. My son is free for the first time ever, right? He's just out there by himself and I can just live and just be and stand next to him and not be worried and not be scared. And we've been able to do so much online that we really want to bring it in person next. But that does involve a whole lot of equipment, lot of planning, and eventually volunteers. So if you're hearing this now, hopefully we've got some of those pieces in by the time this airs. But we will definitely be looking for volunteers for these events to help families and help us get everyone situated. And if you've never seen it or experienced it firsthand, that is where you want to be with your day, is watching that family do something together for the first time they've never been able to do before. It's magical.
I love it. That's absolutely beautiful. And we will be sure, especially when, you know, this all comes out, we're going to share that. We could do a call for volunteers because, you know, I can't imagine somebody doesn't want to be there to help support everything that you're doing. I just love it. Christy, thank you so much. It has been absolutely amazing to sit here and talk to you and hear everything that you're doing. I'm so happy that you guys are able to figure out a way to get out there and to make these memories. And you're literally paving the way for other families to do the same thing. And that's just invaluable. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate you. And for anybody, I'm going to just reiterate, you can find Christy and her story on Instagram at Accessible Adventures. She has a website. Are you on, like, do you guys do TikTok? Anything else that I'm missing?
Yes. Okay. We do TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and it's accessible.adventures. So we are on all of the platforms. And I think if you're in the beginning of your journey and you feel stuck and like you're never going to leave the house again, and it's okay to be there. I'll say that it took me 6 years. I get too many people that are like, I wish that I was doing what you're doing. It took
six years. You'll get there.
You'll get there. You have to heal through it, grow through it. And then when you're ready, which is a different point for everyone and is completely valid, then look for communities like this and join us and get outside and start living. And if your goal is always, if we get to this spot in therapy, because that was my goal, right? If I can just get him to talk, if I can just get him to eat by mouth, if I can just get him to not have to use a wheelchair, I chased that for so long. He has such a beautiful life in his wheelchair. He is so full of adventure. He has so many experiences. And I didn't know that those things could live together. I really thought if we can't get this, then I'm like robbing him of these experiences. And that's just not true. He can adapt everything.
So everybody listening, it's Chrissy. The final message is just so beautiful. And it is, to me, what I hear you saying and what I want to share with everybody is to don't chase the goal down. Don't chase the next step. Start living where you're at, and also give your space time, or give yourself, what am I saying? Give yourself space and time, and you're going to get there, but don't forget to live where you're at. So thank you so much. That was a beautiful message. I love it. It's been a great, it's been a great time. All right, Christy, everybody listening, we air on Tuesdays. You can listen in on Spotify, why can I not talk today, guys? This is what happens when you have four kids and you like do all the things. I went to work today too. Like I had, you know, almost a full shift and we're doing this, but good times. So Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube. So those are where you guys can tune in and listen to us on Tuesday. So everybody enjoy your week and we'll see you soon.
Thank you all for joining us on today's episode of Baby Wearing and Breastfeeding, Nurturing Miracles. I hope you found our discussion enlightening and that you leave feeling supported and empowered. Remember, you are not alone on this journey. Tune in next week for more insights and conversations that connect us all in the shared experience of parenting. Until then, take care and cherish every miracle with your little ones.